For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another look at the world of non-league football. Yes, this week it's a slightly shorter show going into the Christmas break, but we have two of football's hardest working non-league experts to take you into the festive weekend. First up, he's back in non-league with perhaps a perfect timing. 12 years since he took Fleetwood Town into the Football League from the Conference, 6 years since he took Tranmere Rovers back to the 92. He's settling in quickly at Oldham Athletic with sights on the National League playoffs. Mickey Mellon likes good people and he's one of the best himself. And he won't even have Christmas Day off. Getting ready to create our Christmas Eve read, it's Matt Badcock, editor-at-large at the Non-League paper. National League insights, managerial moves and revolutionising refereeing all on the agenda in our discussion, with more to come in the paper out on Christmas Eve. Plenty then to come in this show. Sit back, relax and let's get matters underway. Let's start the week then with an old friend of the show, a man who's applied his trade as a player in both the professional leagues and non-league, and who rose to prominence as a manager from non-league into the EFL and back again before doing it all again and then returning to non-league in October. Through highs and lows, he's always kept his feet on the ground and he's always kept his wit about him too. And I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show manager at Oldham Athletic, Mr. Mickey Mellon. Hello, Mickey.
Hiya, how are you doing? Nice to speak to you.
It's great to get you back on. It's fair to say that I think non-league's been good to you, but you've been good to it too. You've always stayed in touch and kept an eye on the non-league, even when you've been managing higher. But was there ever any doubt in your mind that this was the next job for you?
I don't think you can ever do that in football. I think that when I looked at my current circumstances of where I live and things that I do outside of football, I wanted an opportunity that I believe would fit with that. Obviously, my family got a wee bit older now. My son Michael is at Burnley, so he's in the northwest. So when I looked at all that I was the club that if I was going to get the proper opportunity, along with exciting me and looking like a great project, I was prepared to wait to see if that did come up. And when Oldham came up, I thought that fits just nicely. And it didn't matter if it was non-league or the Football League. Mm-hmm. I had offers to go back into the Football League. I had many offers. I'm not just saying that, I did. But it just didn't fit with what I do now. So, really, really pleased to be here and really enjoying the challenge of being the Oldham manager. And yet, of course, back in the fifth division, back in non-league, if you like. So, yeah, join it.
Yeah, and I said non-league's got a big place in your heart and in your career too. You look back, I think your first move into management was an assistant at Lancaster City. Then you had that youth role at Burnley. Before you combined the two, when you moved into Fleetwood, I remember you were sort of, you were a part-time manager at Fleetwood. You were still working at Burnley in their youth ranks. So in a way, you had the perfect pick and mix intro into seeing the good, the bad and the ugly of both the pro game and the non-league game. Did that help you become a better manager as you are today?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, as a manager, you've got to be able to adjust and adapt. And different challenges present themselves every week. But no more so than when you're in the non-league game, because you're obviously going into different environments, different areas of the country. And they're not always the best pitches in the world and all that kind of thing, or the best, the fanciest dressing rooms. So it helps you to build character for when you get into the Football League that you've gone through that as a manager, having to be able to adjust and adapt. So it's always been a great place for me to go in and be really tested. And definitely the way that my career's gone and having the opportunities to manage in the non-league environments, I've definitely made you a better manager, that's for sure.
And I say that both worlds, the worlds of non-league and the worlds of the pro game, but really, realistically, we're talking now 2023, nearly 2024, there isn't much difference between Football League clubs and those in the National League, is there? As I'm sure you found at Oldham.
Well, I'd probably be able to be a better judge than most.
Yeah.
I believe that because I've done the journey. And what I found was sort of the top, you'd probably say, I mean, right down to Oldham, top 10 in the National League, I would probably say have a lot more ambition than as football clubs to try and grow their football clubs than a lot of teams in League Two. I would absolutely say that. Was it Oldham want to make the club bigger, better, want to grow, want to make it only looking forwards? Whereas, with all due respect, I could name you probably half a dozen clubs that in the Football League that are just happy just to survive and are absolutely deteriorating. So that's why I've always banged on about getting their teams at the non-league into the Football League, because I think that the teams that come out of the National League are really healthy, really healthy football clubs. Like you're looking at your Chesterfields and your Oldhams and all these guys, now you're going to have to look at Wrexham going up, and all these teams that have gone up, Stockport, all go in there with real ambition to grow their football clubs. And I think I've always said that it's crazy that bottleneck appears, that it doesn't let the ambitious clubs grow a non-league into the Football League, because I think they would add to the further up the pyramid with their ambitions. And when you go around now and you go to a lot of the non-league clubs now, the pitches and the facilities and the quality of players in it is getting better all the time.
And that vision is important, isn't it? Yeah, even so, even in levels of non-league as well, because as I said, you were, when you first went to Fleetwood, you were part-time. You became the first full-time manager ever at Fleetwood when they were, Conference North back then. And that's when they really did help things grow on and off the field as a club. Now, that full-time manager state is very much the norm at Step 2. How different is that ability to focus solely on team affairs to trying to juggle it with other jobs and other life?
Oh, it's. I wouldn't say it's easier. At the end of the day, it's always difficult. But it would be certainly for players. I mean, you can look at it both ways. Listen, the wages that a lot of players are getting played in non-league and they're full time, they don't have the opportunity that the non-league players to have a foot in both camps. But they, if it doesn't go right for them, or they get injured, or whatever happens, or they run out of clubs to play for, they can go and play, go into their jobs, whatever they are. I mean, it's changing a wee bit now because there's more and more full-time clubs in the National League. But when I tried to change Fleetwood from a part-time club to a full-time club and having to go in the players and say, right, listen, you're going to have to get rid of your safety net. You're going to just have to be two-foot now into football league. That's certainly a big challenge to play on a Saturday with both foot all in and not the safety net of earning a living also outside of football. So there's loads and loads of ways to look at it. But certainly as you're playing full-time further up the leagues and the money gets bigger and bigger, it's certainly absolutely worth it that you're earning more money. But then again, our boys in football now, you always worry when you get to 33 what you're going to do now. So there's always pros and cons for both sides of it, but certainly I wouldn't say that there's a massive advantage, because guys are all fit now, all these players are all fit now. If you look at our working week now, we'd be off on a Wednesday, we'd do very little on a Monday. Non-league part-time, you'd probably be working around the same kind of workload, if you like. There's pros and cons for both sides.
And you said you were attracted by the project at Oldham Athletic there, and I'm looking through my records, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be aware of this, but you took Fleetwood Town up into the Football League in 2012 from non-league circles. Then 2018 at Tranmere Rovers, promotion back to the Football League. That's a six-year cycle. We're just coming to the end of 2023, which means the season ends in 2024. six-year cycle?
Fingers crossed. Yeah, we're certainly aiming for that. A club the size of Oldham must be very minimum trying to get into the playoffs. So that's what our aim is. It's obviously very difficult in the playoffs. I've won and lost the playoffs in the National League. I've got promoted out of the Conference North fear of playoffs. So I get what they're all about, but I hope you're right. I hope it's a 6-year cycle, and we're saying, well, what a happy coincidence that was.
And realistically, you say about the playoffs there, is the title already Chesterfield's?
Yeah, I think that there would have to be an almighty stumble for Chesterfield. I mean, they're galloping on and they're picking up their victories and getting the results. Of course, it'll be a difficult time when it comes to the hardest part, always trying to get over the line, but I think they've got enough cushion to help deal with that. My old mate Kukeria's doing well. He's assembled a good team there. But you would have to say that it would take a brave man to say that they weren't going to go and win the league.
But it's brave men that get promotion. But in which case, if you're looking at the playoffs, mentally, it's all about peaking at the right time, isn't it? As you said, you've been promoted by the players, but you lost with Fleetwood, didn't you? Wimbledon, I think.
I've actually lost twice now. Yeah. I think, but I lost to Forest Green as well. So yeah. I've lost Forest Green, and I've lost in the final with Forest Green, and I've lost semi-finals with Fleetwood. So yeah, I've had both sides of things. So I know how difficult it is. It's usually the calmest team that hits the levels that, you know, that can win games that are the most successful.
But is it like when you're getting your team ready, you're just outside the playoffs, 3 points outside, but you've got positive goal difference. Your playoffs are well within your sights. Do you want to be the bull at the end that's really in form as you go into those playoffs, or is it just having that mental strength to be able to get through those playoff games?
Well, you'd rather be getting into them with form, but if you've got into the playoffs, then unless you've been sitting in there comfortably for a long time, then you must have been winning games to be in there anyway. Mm. It's always been for me just to find that way of playing, try and get consistent at that, and then try and get the players' mentality right in order to try and hit their levels and just concentrate and being good at that and not trying to get caught up in anything else that you can't control. We've still got a long way to go. We believe that if we do keep hitting their levels of consistency, we will hopefully get in there. So we really are just one day at a time at the minute. The players have had 3 managers this season, if you like. So it's a wee bit to try to steady that down and then the expectations of a big football club. So, but enjoying the challenge. We've got a good staff, and we've got a good group of players, whatever they will probably say, but I genuinely have. I've got a great board of directors that really support me and good people around me. So, no, we'll just keep it steady and keep trying to do the things that gives you a good chance of winning games of football.
Yeah, you say about the good team around you. It's beyond the field, the blurring of the pro game and the non-league games, it's brought some great additions to non-league as well. This week I saw the club published their community trust impact report. There was, you know, information about great work with prisons, with schools, with hospitals, fans. All that's so important in modern day football as well, because it helps bring your players closer to the fans too.
Well, I think I think football has to understand its position in the community. It represents the community. The football side of the community, if you like. And also, if you reach out, you can really reach to a lot of people. So football clubs should really be endeavouring to be a big part of the community, and we try and do that here, to reach out from the platform that we have to try and do the best we can to either represent the local people by winning games of football and representing what they like, or we get out there and try and get in among the people to try and bring a wee bit of just connecting people, really, and through the brilliant game of football, just trying to make people's life a wee bit happier, just by saying, look, we're here as well, and we're part of you guys.
And is that important for you as well, for players that are coming through your team? Because I know that's important to you as a person beyond football, with the other bits and pieces that you do. Does it make it? I don't know if it makes for a better person. It makes for a different person, doesn't it? It gives them other insights beyond football.
Yeah, I think it's generally. I wouldn't make any great assumptions about footballers because they get involved in the community and all the rest. But I think you should. I think if you're a good person, and you understand where your place is in the community with the football club, then you want to get out there and you want to go and see the kids in school. You want to go up to the hospitals like they have done here, the kids that can't go home for Christmas, and yeah, go and support the local community, the elderly people, and the people who might need a wee bit of support in the community. You've got to be able to reach out and do that, but I think every decent person would want to do that. It's just that obviously I'm involved in football and we're very, very keen to try and do that here, to reach out to the local people of Oldham. But I've always done that at all my football clubs. I think it's an important thing to do.
Yeah, it certainly seems an important thing at Oldham. I was lucky enough to meet the club's Her Game 2 ambassador, Alison Schofield, earlier this summer, presented her with the non-league paper's National Game Fan of the Year Award for her great work in making sure football is enjoyable for everybody. Boundary Park. And that's important, isn't it? Because
yeah, we must reach out to everybody and give everybody the opportunity that wants to watch football, watch football. If we can provide the facilities for them to come and do that, football should try and do that, because it's such a great game, and that's the power of it, that you can have something that you can feel that you can belong to with your local community. And we can do that here at Oldham. That's our position in the community, so we try and do that.
Yeah, it's important for everybody as well, because obviously the club fined this week £5,000 for the crowd disturbance against Chesterfield back in August, and that's important that everybody takes responsibility for clamping down on the violence, on hate speech, on people entering the field of play when they shouldn't be, pyrotechnics, before somebody's going to get seriously injured, and it's going to have a negative impact on football and everybody enjoying it.
Yeah, I'd just get back to what I was saying earlier. Just be a good person.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you think that there's a decision to be made, a yes or a no, but if I do this, is it going to affect the club or the status of the football club or how people perceive the football club? There'll be a yes or a no question, answer to that question. And if you can get more and more people asking themselves that question and making sure that they answer that question positively and don't do things to tarnish the reputation of this great football club, then it will be all right. But you obviously get people get carried away. We've all been there. You get carried away. It's such an emotional game. If you score a goal, you just want to explode, don't you? But you just got to try and your best to try and behave yourself. And as long as it stays good-hearted, then we don't have any problem with that. But we're trying our best here. But we have really, really we have such passionate supporters here that so are crying out for joy from the football clubs, because it's had so much difficult times in the past few seasons. Sometimes they get a bit carried away, but I don't think I know their intentions are not in a bad place.
And talking of character, I mean, you had a multitude of managers when you were a player, I think including Sam Allardyce when you were at Blackpool. Was that player always going to be a manager?
No, I wouldn't say that you could say that. I just think the opportunity comes your way in football, and you obviously can work harder to be ready and look for opportunity, but then you've got to still go and be able to go and take that. And I don't really think you know you're going to be a manager until you are one, or a coach until you are one. Because that's it. It's when you are wearing that hat or sitting in that seat, got the decisions to make, they're all looking at you, then that's when you'll know if you're going to be a manager or not. And a lot of people have done that and thought, oh, that's not for me. And other people have thought, oof, I love that. So until you're actually in that hot seat, underneath that sword of Damocles, if you like, and it's spinning above your head and it's all on you, then you'll know. But I wouldn't say that even back then I was as a player, you just take it day by day, game by game, and only think about yourself, really, and your team, trying to win games of football. But as you move through, you do your coaching badges and things and think, well, if an opportunity comes away, I'm going to be ready. And then if one does, you've got to take it.
And we spoke with Phil Parkinson at Altrincham last week. They've got the Saturday TV game at Bromley this weekend, which makes for a late Christmas finish for them. You're at home on Saturday and then an away day at Hartlepool on Boxing Day. What's going to be your routine between those two games?
We'll obviously play Saturday and then we'll be in Christmas Day and then we'll play Boxing Day. So we'll just treat it as a fantastic day. I love coming in Christmas Day morning and seeing all the lads and that. And it's
roads are empty, so you can just fly in and play Driving Home for Christmas for Chris Rear and boom, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And then you go back, everyone's all tidied up again, and you go home your Christmas. And then Boxing Day football, you can't beat it. You can't beat Boxing Day football. So, no, I enjoy it. It's what we've always done, but we'll be on Christmas Day morning to train because it's the day before a game.
And it's, again, I guess the lads that have, are playing for you, they've come through academies, they've grown up in football. That's just a Christmas tradition.
Yeah, it's our job. Like, Father Christmas delivers presents, footballers play Christmas Day, Boxing Day. That's what we do, we train Christmas Day. Only us and him work Christmas, and the great NHS people and the other people that work Christmas Day, so we've got to get on with that. Everybody else, yeah, does that, but that's your job, so we've got to crack on. So it's, yeah, it's not something that's new to us.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Mickey Mellon, it sounds like you've got a busy Christmas ahead, along with Santa and the NHS, so better let you get on.
And the armed forces and all these kind of guys, before you miss anybody out, they all start going, yeah, me. Everybody who watches Christmas Day will understand that it's just what we do.
You're a good person. You always make sure that you include everybody. It's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck at the weekend, over the Christmas period, and hopefully we'll speak to you again before the end of the season.
Well, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to all the guys out there who are listening and all the rest of it, and look forward to seeing you all in Boxing Day, and away we go again.
Time of the week, then time of the year to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, the Non-League Paper Editor at large. It's Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you, Tim. Merry Christmas.
It is. It's Merry Christmas. Everybody's really excited. People are wearing Christmas jumpers all over the place, and I'm just tripping over parcels everywhere I move. It is exciting because we have lots of football, lots of opportunities for fans to get together. You know, most leagues still have those local derbies as well as all that additional bit of banter. Are you able to get out and see any football this Christmas then, Matt?
I'm not saying that Mrs. B does or doesn't listen to this, but I have to go out to a game on Boxing Day for work. Yes, that's the line that I'm going with. Yes, I've got to go out. I've got to do it. I've got to do it for the non-league game.
You have to do it
for my own sanity.
But it is an important part of... Well, being involved in football, being involved in non-league football, we spoke to Mickey Mellon earlier, and obviously he mentioned the big man in the red suit, not Dave Anderson, but he has a busy Christmas, but so does anybody in non-league football as well. And we've got a full programme of National League action this weekend and on Tuesday, Boxing Day. We keep saying it, but it is hard to see beyond Chesterfield for the title. But other than that, I guess... any one of 23 for the playoffs?
This basically sums up nicely the National League this year, the way it's been going so far. It's, I think as we've said before, you know, Wrexham and Notts County and what they were doing last year and the sort of the records that they went on to set. And, well, I mean, the way Chesterfield are going at the moment, you wouldn't bet against that being broken again. I mean, as we sit here today, they're 8 points clear of Bromley. Bromley have played two games more than them. They've got a game in hand on Barnet as well. We were 13 points back now. So, yeah, it does kind of feel like this is where we're heading, and that Chesterfield are not long for non-league much, you know, after a few years of kind of near misses, and obviously last year how close they went with the penalty shootout and even minutes from winning the game in normal time as well. So it's, definitely we're in theirs to lose territory. But, you know, this, if football was as a formality all the time, we wouldn't all be watching it, would we? And that's why we'll be keeping an eye. Obviously, they've got their big FA Cup third round game to come in. Come in January as well, so there'll be another weekend there where everyone else is kind of playing, and they'll be in a cup action. So they'll have games to catch up on, but I think they'll be very, very happy where they are at the at the moment, to say the least. Only lost twice all season, and formidable side at the moment.
Yeah, and they still got to get the results, of course, in the league, and a couple of tough matches this Christmas that I guess could potentially change it all again. On Saturday, Chesterfield at home to Aldershot, and we know the form that they've been in, and then I guess the other big game of the weekend, that TV game, Bromley against Altrincham. We spoke to Phil Parkinson about that last week, which. So I think Altrincham may just be returning home just in time for Santa arriving on Christmas morning on that one. And then looking at the other games on Boxing Day, Solihull Moors are entertaining Chesterfield Boxing Day. Altrincham hosting FC Halifax in the evening on TV. We've got Southend and against Barnet as well on Boxing Day. So there are some big games that could flick it all around. As you mentioned, Bromley second, Barnet third. That could all change because it is so tight. We spoke to Mickey Miller. I think they're, 10th in the table, 3 points outside the playoffs. By the end of Christmas, the table could look very different.
Yeah, I think it probably will the way, as you say, the way the games are stacked. I mean, it doesn't feel as kind of as busy as it sometimes does as games on, Saturday into Mondays and things, which you sometimes see. Or midweek, or later in the week, Wednesdays or Thursdays into Saturdays and Sundays, around everything that's going on. It's kind of like almost like a normal midweek, so to speak, with a Saturday, Tuesday, and then into the following weekend where it's kind of a bit of a mishmash, isn't it? Some games on Saturday, some games being held over to New Year's Day. So, but it's kind of a pivotal week, 9 days where, three good results. You come out the other side of it into the new year and you can see where you need to be and where you're heading, and it's foot down kind of thing. And it's on the opposite side of that, top three bad results in a week, and suspension in the red card in the first game, and lose a player for the next two or whatever it might be, and suddenly you've slipped down the table where everybody else has may got their points. So it's kind of one of those points of the calendar that we always look to, the Christmas period we're coming in now. How are clubs going to fare around all the other stuff that's sort of going on around football and in their own lives and things, and who's going to come through the other side of it in the best shape and in all leagues as well.
Yeah, in all leagues, and as we find out from speaking to managers further down the pyramid, sometimes in part-time football, lower down, there's other burdens and availability which can have a massive impact on your squads at this time of year.
Yeah, I think we see that more and more now. Otherwise, the world's kind of changed, isn't it? With different pressures that people have, and there's sometimes for some people it's the only chance to get away with family and stuff like that. Kids get to school and all these kind of things that kind of play into modern life now. And I guess that's the challenge for everybody, isn't it? How do you who wakes up, who's had some dodgy turkey on Christmas Day and wakes up on Boxing Day not feeling too good and can't play? It's about rolling with those punches and how you adapt. And those are the teams who do that best of those setbacks throughout seasons, are the ones who are there in the mix at the end.
Yeah, and it is at the time of the year where we all look at it as maybe turning points of seasons, and that this week we've seen a few managerial changes that's no doubt going to be a few more over the Christmas break, I'm sure, as a result of some of these results. The big appointment this week came filling the vacant spot at Woking. We've spoken a bit about this in recent weeks. Michael Doyle, the appointee, they've taken their time, but what an appointment.
I've certainly taken the time. Yeah, it's been over a month since Darren Sahl left, wasn't it? And the club sort of put out a statement last week. I suppose probably because fans were asking questions about what was going on, what direction were they going to go in, and here we have our answer. Michael Doyle, obviously, it's his first job in management as a number one manager. He's been assistant at Forest Green with Ian Birchnell, and he was on the coaching staff at Notts County as well with Birchnell. But the experience that he's got, he's he's gone from, in the last couple of years, being one of those veteran older players to being a young manager in his first job at 42. So, you know, great experience, obviously, Sheffield United, Portsmouth, Coventry, and then in Notts County, and that's where he had his, you know, his non-league experience there as well, and seeing it up close, seeing what the National League's all about, and playing in it, and that will obviously help in going into Woking. But it will be interesting. I don't think they haven't had a press conference yet, but it'll be interesting sort of hearing from him for the first time, and kind of how he's sort of seeing this role and seeing this job, because obviously there's probably two parts to it. The importance now of winning some games, and, you know, they beat Dorking last week, didn't they? That was an important one. It just sort of eased them up from the just away from the relegation zone a touch, you know, only 2 points above it. So it's not like they've sort of made great strides or anything like that, but it was just kind of ease them away, you know, after a bad run of defeats, just sort of turn the gloom for a change. So it'll be interesting whether how he's thinking about that and where they are now from that point of view, but also then the long term idea. You know, he's been in at Portsmouth sort of academy, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's come from that sort of background as well of coaching, and yeah, I'm sure that there'll be an emphasis on that sort of future development as well. But always found him to be, you know, I've not really spoken to him at great length, but, you know, I've been up at Notts County and kind of, you know, you could see that sort of regard that he was held by everybody up there around that. You know, he's kind of one of those silly little things where you're walking through the stadium and he sort of, you know, makes a point of kind of saying hello, and, you know, that, you know, not he didn't know who I was or anything like that, but, you know, he sort of, you know, he comes across as that type of character and that sort of leadership that he's obviously going to be taking into the role. Obviously, the opening for him is you've got Maidenhead on this Saturday, but then you go into packed for that games with local rivals, Aldershot, away at Aldershot. Obviously, we've just had a fly-in on Boxing Day, and then the return leg on return game on New Year's Day, which is you know, two massive games in his first three. You know, big crowds and all the sort of the pressures that come with that. So it'll be fascinating for him. But what a way to dive straight into your job, the first job there as well.
Yeah, and we always talk about, you know, the contacts and managers at non-league. At any level, I'm sure, are on their phone constantly, you know, trying to keep contacts alive, speaking to, swapping messages with agents, players, and people, other people within the game. And, you know, over 800 appearances as a pro, you know, I've worked under some of the biggest managers in the game, and you, as you say, more recently a player than many other managers, and his experience at Notts County, he's going to have a great ear to the ground, I'd imagine, with players, particularly also with that most recent role at Portsmouth. But interesting to see that he's come in, but he's keeping the staff that have been sort of in that caretaker role and steadying the ship in the last few weeks on board as well. So I think caretaker Ian Dyce is going to stay as the assistant. You've got goalkeeper coach Marlon Beresford and player coach Scott Cuthbert also staying on to. And I guess that's, you know, as ever, you need some people on the ground that know the club as well as the football that you're going to be playing.
Yeah, I think so. It's, you know, I guess everyone will have their own ways of doing it. Some just like to come in with a whole brand new staff, don't they? And others, you know, happy to go with that kind of inside info, as you say. And someone like Ian Dyer has been there for a long time now, so Dowser initially, didn't he? But, you know, he's been there a long time, had a couple of caretakers, and we'll know that squad intimately and inside out, and be able to give the new man all the lowdown on everything, really, and his opinion. I'm sure someone like Michael Doyle will take that on board. You know, as you say, in his playing career, you see the success that he's had at different clubs, you know, what he has achieved and the longevity that he's had as well. You know, he's going to come in with some very clear ideas about what he wants to do, and all the information that's going to be fed into him will be, I'm sure, he'll take on board and use it. And I think one of the other sides of it as well is possibly there's you know, there are some older players in that Woking squad, and can he kind of help them as well? Because, you know, it's not that long ago, he's walking in their shoes sort of towards the end of the careers, and, you know, and how to get the best out of their bodies, because obviously he went on for a long time as well. So I think there's going to be that sort of side of it. And as we said, his playing CV just commands huge respect right from the off. So, yeah, great first, yeah, number one role for him. And, you know, I'm sure, as I said, it did take time. There have been a lot of managers who wanted the job and were interested, and he's got the nod above them all. Mm.
And it does seem now that almost every manager's younger than me now. So I mean, I don't know what that says about me, but Bradford Park Avenue also with a big appointment this week in the form of former Macclesfield boss Danny Whittaker. In as, I think, first team head coach's official title, but obviously, again, another young manager that showed promise at Mac, and BPA were obviously hoping he can, you know, reproduce that up at Bradford Park Avenue.
Yeah, definitely. He had, you know, it's gone one of those last, when he lost his job at the first team at Macclesfield, it was a surprise for everybody, wasn't it? You know, the way where they'd been going and what he'd achieved in his early time there. But again, another player who went on, you know, right into not only onto the back nine of his career, you know, I think he played another round after that as well. And, you know, these are yeah, all great characters. I had the pleasure of spending a few hours with him a few years ago at our National Game Awards, and you know, great company. And you want to see people like that succeed. And obviously, he's going to. Was Macclesfield kind of felt like it was his club, and all that he'd achieved kind of in his spells as a player there at the club, and its old guys, you know, he's going into somewhere new and fresh for him now, and he'll be looking to have that impact and to shape it the way he wants, I'm sure.
Yeah, and he's going in there at Bradford Park Avenue, what, 18th out of 22, but that's the one spot above the drop zone in that step three. It is so difficult to stay up, really, because we're four going down. They're one point clear with games in hand. So I have to get things sorted pretty quickly. Speed not of the essence elsewhere. On their way out, Steve Castle, joint manager at Royston Town, he spent 10 years there as gaffer, decided that now's the time to pull away, leaving Chris Watters in sole charge there. Again, I'm sure you've had the pleasure of speaking with and interviewing Steve Castle. Another one of those people that given so much to the non-league game.
Yeah, 100%, and given so much to Royston and kind of what he's achieved there and how he's helped establish that club at where they are now, and, you know, think of the players that come through there as well. You know, I think we saw Southend right back / goalkeeper after last week. Gus Scott Morris was saying, you know, what important impact he had on his career, and he's got a few other lads who've come through Royston and gone into the professional ranks down the years as well. And I see that he's gone in at AFC Sudbury as well, hasn't he, onto their coaching staff to kind of, you know, that sort of, you know, lend that invaluable knowledge and kind of understanding of, you know, clubs sort of similar kind of come up from, obviously, when he was there, you know, similar sort of size possibly, and you know, can give that experience for Sudbury in that league. Won promotion last year. You know, it's not been plain sailing for them since they've come up, but, you know, getting another voice on their management team like that will be huge.
Yeah, and elsewhere, perhaps not surprising, old friend of the show, Gary Haylock, departs from Binfield, bottom of the Isthmian South Central. In the Southern League Central, though, a bit more surprising, second place North Lee have parted company with James Keller. I think he cited business pressures on that one, so it'll be an interesting to see who they bring in as a replacement there. The other big change came at the, how can I describe, tumultuous North Shields. Last week we saw players and I think everybody, including the dustpan and brush, depart amid the financial issues and various bits and pieces. This week we see the former Newcastle Blue Square boss, Brian Smith, assisted by Steve Cuggy and Sean McCafferty, taking on the managerial reins. And I'd imagine their phones have been very busy trying to reassemble a squad ahead of the Christmas period.
yeah, definitely, obviously, worrying times for it's going on at North Shields, and you can obviously see in some other clubs, you know, Mask and their difficulties up there as well, aren't they? You know, for different reasons, but see, it comes down to money a lot of it. And you know, we've been at Wembley not that long ago watching North Shields, and when they won the Vars, and we obviously saw their promotion. They got relegated last year because of the ground issues. So it's not been an easy time for them. Yeah, but you know, as you say, the incoming management, you know, they know North East football at the back of their hands, don't they, from the, you know, the sort of experiences they've got and what they've done up there and Vases and finals and all that they've won and Whitley Bay and all that kind of thing. So I'm sure they'll be banging the phones and getting a squad together. But it does seem to be a time for change, isn't it? And if you see another one of the Bracknell pair going as well, Jay McClurg and Carl Withers, which, you know, she's talking about Binfield with Gary Haylock leaving there, former Binfield managers, and, you know, had done well, really well at Bracknell, and continued the sort of success for the club, getting up from step four under Bobby Wilkinson. And, you know, they got out a FA Cup run this year as well as last year, didn't they? So, shame to see them stand down. But again, you know, football moves quickly, isn't it? And I'm sure there'll be managers who already have stuck their CVs in for that one.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be many a club on the phone to the two of them as well to maybe bring them quickly back into some sort of a position. As I say, though, I'm sure there'll be more changes over the Christmas break to discuss as well. Otherwise, it's been fairly quiet on the news front, but it is that time of year for various reports, and one out this week from the FA is the grassroots discipline review. Some interesting points of note in terms of outcomes are the potential for points deductions for clubs at step seven who constantly have bad discipline issues. In addition, there might be ground closures discussed as a penalty for clubs at steps five and six. And the most interesting part, I think, was the feedback on the use of those body-worn cameras for officials. We mentioned it before. They trialled this at grassroots level, I think, mainly county league games. It appears that when on camera, everybody behaves, because there were no reports of abuse of officials in those trial matches. So I would think there's a likelihood that last one in particular may well be rolled out higher up the pyramid, maybe gradually, you know, steps up to step three and four, maybe in the next rollout. Which, you know, considering some of the issues that we have been having across the pyramid, maybe that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it sort of seems, you know, particularly sort of grassroots level and kind of what some of the things that we've seen going on there down the years, and it's kind of a bit of a shows where we are in this country for whatever reason. You know, you go into going to your local supermarket and they've got body cams on now as well, haven't they? And, you know, it just seems to be that this is where we are in this slightly strange country that we live in. It seems that people just seem, obviously, think they can act how they want and say what they want without consequence. And, you know, if it's a deterrent that's working and if there are other things that can be brought in, then I'm all for it. Because, you know, it's pretty boring, isn't it, really? So, you know, that people can't control themselves, can't handle themselves when they're playing playing a game of football. I think it's sort of, again, it says a lot about where we seem to be at the moment. But if it's acting as a deterrent and stopping it, then good, because, you know, the body camera does not lie. If someone's saying something, or you know, it's all caught on there, and you know, if someone is stepping over the mark, then gives that, you know, the confidence for the officials to have that to fall back on. It gives the authorities the confidence to deal with it as well, rather than always he said, she said, this, that, what went on. You know, sort of slight changing of the truth. It's on the camera. It's on the camera, and you can see it, and there you go. So, yeah, hopefully it continues in that way, but also maybe just hopefully people can sort of just generally start thinking about their behaviour. I don't know quite why people decide that they need to abuse anybody wherever it is, whether it is on a football pitch or in local supermarket. I don't really get it, but there we are, that's where we
Well,
it seems to be at the moment.
As Mickey Mellon told us earlier on the show, that he just wants people to be good people. So hopefully this will make sure that the people that are on the field are good people. And as you say, I can see it giving more confidence to people coming through as referees, so that we, you know, love them or hate them, we need referees, and we need more people to come through the ranks to become referees. And, you know, maybe this might be the additional boost that we need to get those numbers up.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a thing that people seem to forget, particularly at those, that, you know, kind of a real grassroots level, that you know, what are you going to do without referees? You're just not going to have games of football, are you? So, you know, everybody's got a collective responsibility, you know, in the game, and that's the way clubs are and the way their coaches and managers behave as well, and the sort of the, you know, but as you say, it's just like being decent, good people, and just, you know, all realising that everybody has a part to play in it, because when there's no referees, people are going to soon be sort of kicking off at, you know, why is this, why is that, why is it, you know, well, people have to look at themselves. And, you know, that's the thing with a young referees coming through, it's not easy turning up by yourself at a pitch and, you know, making decisions. You know, you're learning at that sort of levels as well. You're often learning the game and learning it and understanding, and, you know, mistakes are going to be made, and, you know, it's all understanding. It's also a development in having a development in their sort of future as well. And, you know, clubs and responsible people at the clubs have got to have an understanding as well that it's not just about, you know, yourselves. It's about the whole game and the future of it as well. And, you know, the more referees that are coming through, the stronger the refereeing is going to be throughout the whole system, going right up to the top as well.
Yeah, I think that's an important bit, because you and I have got each other to bounce off, and you know, John Couch and everybody else at the non-league paper. When we have something, you need to run past someone, you have that support. But as a referee, particularly, you know, on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning game, maybe at grassroots level, you haven't even got your assistant referees to fall back on, because they're probably from the sides that you've got the issue with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're from the club at those levels. You've been someone from the, you know, substitute who's hacked off, but he hasn't been picked again. He's third to pay his fiver, you know, on the line, isn't he? So, you know, the heart's not always in it, and often, you know, it's seen through the rose tinted specs. So it's not easy, and it is often, as you say, turn up by yourself to places, and if you feel intimidated and feel under pressure and worried about what's going to happen if you just make a decision, then, you know, you can see why people think, that's not for me. Why would you bother? It's a very strange thing, the way, you know, I imagine that, you know, a lot of people will get real enjoyment out of it and probably don't have many problems, the majority probably are, it probably is fine, and that clubs, you know, are welcome and do understand that well. But there's this sort of section, it seems, of society generally and football that seems to think that when they're down the park, that's, you know, they're in sort of Champions League final territory, and every decision matters, and you know, and it's supposed to be sort of delivered at this sort of high elite level, and it's just not the case. So I just hopefully that into the new year, things like this can be cleared up. But then you look at things going on in Turkey, where you've got people going out crowds and punching referees, and you think, well.
And sort of fairly important people within the club coming out and punching referees, which is
just bizarre.
The world is bizarre, but I don't know. Maybe that's what keeps us ticking along. Non-league. It's been the trailblazer in so many things. So maybe we can help with, you know, these cameras and prove that football's a nice game and played by nice people and watched by nice people. Plenty of league action for you guys at the non-league paper to be reporting about. On games on Saturday, I guess the non-league paper are going to be delivered even before Santa comes with a Christmas Eve edition. Anything else we can expect to find in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, we're out on Sunday as usual, and talking about managers young managers and managed women younger than your good self and my, even myself now these days as well. I mean, which is quite sobering. But I've caught up with Pat Saracchi at Gosport, who's 25. You know, step three managers Pat Saracchi and Joe Lee is his joint manager. Sorry, do it together. Joe's 26 and. You know, they're going well. They've stepped up from Petersfield at step six in the summer. And you know, Gosport's a club that they know. They both play for Gosport and the roles of the academy there and setting all that up down at the club. But they stepped up in the summer up to step three football. And at the moment, I think they're third or fourth in the Southern Premier South and going well. And I sort of said to Pat about, you know, it kind of being... Was risk too much of a, is risk too much of a strong word? And sort of, well, actually, probably was the right one because it was a risk for the club to be appointing such young managers and probably for themselves as well. If it didn't go well, then that was going to be what they would stick from them. But you know, going great guns at the moment, probably over exceeding their expectations that they had at the start of the season. But you know, so he's a very engaging. Person's chat to Pat, and you can see these boys going on and doing really, really good things in the game. So, you know, the sort of impact that they've already had at, you know, Petersfield last year at step six, and now with Gosport Borough. So, peace in there with them. So, you've got lots of festive fun in there. I think we'll be dishing out our light-hearted, tongue-in-cheek non-league presents. Speaking to new manager, Woking manager Michael Dawes, already said, and then all the action as well. Also caught up with Chorley boss Andy Priest. That's another piece that's going in as well. Again, another side going. He got through his front off the win at Banbury on Tuesday night. I think he got in about 2 a.m. So that sort of shows what everyone's going through to get those 3 points. And it all soon rolls on to the next game.
Yeah, well, it looks a very exciting Christmas period, a very exciting edition of the non-league paper to pick up. Matt Badcock, as ever, thanks for all your help. Have a great Christmas, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks, Tim. Have a great Christmas.
And then that is it for this week. Thanks, as ever, to all of my guests and everybody for listening. A big thank you to all of those who get involved on social media at Non League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. You can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Little Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe then. Enjoy your football. Have a great Christmas. Thank you. And goodbye.
The Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA. JABBA.